Today, we have a very special guest. Her name is Bikin Nguyen, and she is joining us from Vietnam, about 3 hours away from Saigon. Biki and her business partner, Nam Deng, are cricket farmers. The farm is called Cricket One, and they grow insects for food. Biki and Nam started their cricket farm a few years ago, driven by the idea of sustainable and healthy protein production.
I am Lina Zeldovich, and this is Making Sense of Science.
Biki, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for inviting me into your podcast, Lina. So thanks everyone for tuning in, and hello again.
So Biki, my first question to you is, have you ever eaten a cricket before you started your farm?
Actually, it's like cricket is no novelty here in Vietnam, because it's like it's also part of our culture to consume crickets. So even is that if I mentioned the name to my parents or to my grandparents, I think the first thing came to their mind is like during the season, and then they're going to get it in a while, and then they remove the gut, they stuff it with peanut, deep fry, or stir fry with fish sauce, and also people have it with rice and with borage. So that is the childhood story that we got from our grandparents. But when it gets to our generations, then cricket is also, I would not say it's a common thing that you can find on the street in Vietnam. It's not like in Bangkok or in Cambodia. It's like in Thailand or Cambodia. Vietnam has a different culture towards cricket. So we can have it, but then it's going to require a certain effort to go. For example, is that we have to go to a different area, different provinces to have cricket. Or if in the city, you have to go to certain restaurants where they sell those exquisite, exalted food, then we still can have cricket. But it's just not something cheap. So, for example, it's like we used to have to pay like $5 for a dish with countable amounts of cricket. And it is also a different species anyway. But why in Thailand, in Cambodia, you can easily find those like insect carts on the street, and then mainly serving either like rural people or for tourists as some sort of like a daring game or once of the lifetime experience they get during their trip into Asia, to South Asia.
How interesting. I think when I talked to Nam last time, he said that, you know, in some parts of the country, people still you eat crickets, but they typically wouldn't buy them. They would just go and forage for them in the forest.
Yes, it's more like a wild catch during the season, especially during the harvesting season, or when the grain about to ripe, then that would be the main season for crickets.
Okay, so what inspired you to start the farm? I think it was the idea of farming sustainable protein in a way that would be healthy for the people and the planet. So tell me, what was your journey?
So the journey of Nam and myself, it would date back to like 9 years ago. So we both shared the same passions for sustainability. So before Cricket One, we co-founded another tech company that was the leading and pioneer in Southeast Asia for IoT in agriculture, where we produce the sensors. We develop a cloud platform embedded with the algorithm, and then we sell the kit of sensors to the farmers. They plug into the crop, into the like spawn, like shrimp pond, launch the app. It's going to give them early alert, or they give them advice how to water, how to fertilizer, or how to optimize the farming conditions of the shrimp pond. So so we both like having like very strong passion toward the agriculture, sustainability, and so on. And then after that, we make an individual exit. And then we were thinking, what would be the next step? And then we said there would be four sectors that would never be dying out from our society. One is healthcare, one is the energy, the other one is water and food. But when it comes to healthcare, this is something only passion could lead you somewhere. It requires certain educations, of course. And then the next one is will be the energies. And for energies, it will be a different game. It will be a mega micro game. So we have left, which is water and fertilizer. So water and food. So what we've done in the past is very much involved into water. So we think, okay, let's expand it into food. So while scouting for an idea, we just went out to a local restaurant, low chair, and that restaurant appeared and happened to serve cricket. So over a few glasses of beer, so we ordered a plate of deep fried cricket. And then while we were munching on the cricket with a wild facial expressions, then the Nam told me it's like he came across a report from Food and Agriculture Organizations about cyclic proteins. And then we said, this is interesting because I also listened to another podcast from a Dutch university back then about this new train, and then they run a lot of trial and also a lot of data collected and research in Southeast Asia. So we start pivoting the discussion during that dinner into only about insects and so on. And then we told each other, it's like, if we're going to have another venture together, then we should do something with a sustainable margin, not fighting against the other sector for a small margin and return for a big volume. So we was thinking in between either we go for feed or we go for human consumptions. And then we decide, okay, let's go for human consumptions. And then there come crickets. So that's just the whole journeys and experience we have with cricket. So we try and experiment different insects before we went down to cricket. So so far, cricket is still on the highest scale in terms of sustainability. It's in terms of like human friendliness when people are adopting a new or novel thing. And also the last thing is the nutrition's profile of the cricket to what our health impact. Yeah. So and then the more we look and then we realize that this is a perfect improvement and renowned solution to tackle global food crisis and also the climate change.
I see. So you did your research and you decided it was a good idea. And now years later, it's clear that your research was spot on because the global population is estimated to increase by 10 billion by 2050 and food production also needs to increase. And that's a serious challenge, particularly when it comes to meat, because growing cattle and poultry is very inefficient, polluting, and wasteful way to make protein. Farming animals takes too much land and water and other resources. And on the contrary, insects are very easy to grow, I understand, and they're high in protein and low in fat. And they feed on agricultural leftovers that otherwise would just rot in the fields or get burned. So tell us how crickets grow on your farm. I understand it's a big covered space and there are containers that house like thousands of crickets. So I wish I could see this amazing spectacle, but I can't. I'm too far away. So please tell me what would I see, hear, and smell if I walked in.
Okay, I will try my best with my limited English speaking and English explanation skill, okay?
Go ahead.
Because it's like, that is the beauty of podcasts. Like, we trick your imaginations of our audience, is it? So how our crickets farm? So actually, this is the same question we get from our clients, from our investor before they got into our farm. So in their mind, they would imagine is that it would be a free range cricket. It's a whole house, a whole shed house with millions of cricket flying around or crawling on the floor. And then one step you make, you might just step on a bunch of cricket. So that is a very common reaction, or I would say imaginations of people. But actually it's like with the way we found cricket, it's completely different pictures. So firstly is that we don't do free range. We divide them into a small colonies. We call it like a micro unit. And every single micro unit like that is like a massive plastic box. It's about like 80 centimeter times 1.2 times 80 meter depth in terms of dimensions. I'm not sure whether your American audience would be familiar with the metrics, but for sure you can help with that. And then inside, we design a system. We call it a cricket building, like cricket apartment buildings, because like cricket is not like grasshopper or it's not like the other bugs that they travel or they hang themselves, clean themselves on the branches. Cricket is more like a sheltering creature. So they feel comfortable, and then they grow their family, they grow their community, they grow their colonies with the shelters. So the more shelters we provide them, then the better for the colony to grow. And then they feel less stressed, they feel more comfortable. Then they will eat better, and then they drink better, and then they grow better. So inside every single unit of that, we equip with a, we call it a cricket apartment building, where we have a lot of like rack and column stacked on each other. And then we have a design designated area for feed tray, and we also have an automatic watering system. So we have like we have like five patterns on our farming practices design, but we have three already approved and two are on the way that under reviewing. So the beauty of that is like for example, cricket, they don't need a lot of water, but they need water. For example, it's like farming like 1 kilo of cricket. It would require like, how would I say, 2,000 times less water than farming cow. But it doesn't mean that they don't need cricket, but they are just so tiny. So the journey for them to get water is very difficult compared to the other animal farming. So what we have to do is that we have to provide them the right technique, right approach to drink water. If it's a traditional water tray, like in chicken farming, they're going to drown. And then when they drown, there's like toxic gas coming up. Also, they get composite. And so there's a very bad environment for the other cricket. And then if they don't get enough of water, they also couldn't survive. So what we do is that we develop this kind of like automatic like piping water system. They just like clean themselves on, and then they start sucking the water from those sponges. So it saves a lot of like labor to change the water system in a traditional cricket farming, or even like our water system is sold and requested to be sold a lot to European cricket farms. And then we save like labor costs. We also save time to clean and to water them. And then the third thing, which is the most important one, is like we make the farming environment extremely clean and dry. So for example, it's like just a comparison is that if you go to those like big farmer chicken farm, you're gonna have like a big wave of smell coming to your face, and then there's a lot of like ventilation here and there to make sure the environment is completely like ventilated, circulated well, so not to have the gas like stuff, or not to have the methane from the waste. So the reason the conventional livestock farming is so smelly because the manure is always wet, and they always have to spray water on the animal. So this is the way that make the environment stinks, or make the environment doesn't seem to be very pleasant for the workers or for any visitor get inside that environment. But for cricket farming, because we manage everything so dry, we never spray any water on the environment. So everything is completely dry, even the cricket fresh itself, the moisture is less than 6%. So it's extremely dry. It's just like sand or dust. So we keep that environment with that pattern. Even it's not a skyrocket technology, but it's completely changed the whole practice of cricket farming and also reduced a lot of risk during cricket farming. And then we tackle them, those like micro unit that I mentioned earlier, on top of each other. So we don't believe in a super high vertical farming, because like we don't foresee less food ladders, is that we try to solve the problem of food security, then we shouldn't apply anything skyrocket technologies that get down to a very like heavy depreciation per kilo of product, right? So we need to make the product to be accessible and affordable by everyone. So we try not to do vertical farming that too high. So for us, is that the best optimal number it would be 4 layers, which is around like 2 meter or 2.5 meter maximum. And then it's gonna be easier for handling, for practicing, and also like it's not too heavy for the laborers. And then the other hand is that it doesn't require a super fancy, difficult to develop conveyor belt, or they call it like the robotic arm to take care of the crickets. So we tackled them up, and this is how we found the cricket. So we follow a very strict food safety protocol. So the whole cycle at the entire farming area, it has to be a concrete floor cover. So we don't, so the whole cycle of cricket, they don't touch the soil. Even the workers, when they walk around the farm or the nutritionists, their food still cleans because they don't touch the soil. It's a completely clean concrete floor. So this is how we farm a cricket, because it's like we've been thinking about what would be the best practices for people to look into the sectors, because we think it's like insects is something that we see, we squeeze with our feet, right, our foot. But that's why the first thing we have to get over is that it's a clean and safe farming practices, or even safer than a conventional animal farming.
What do you feed your insects?
So actually, our insect is vegan. So cricket, they are cold-blooded, so they are what they eat. So if you give them a very heavy, strong smell feed, then the smell gonna taste, they're gonna stay in the finished product. So what we try to do is that we try to feed a cricket with very, very neutral taste and flavor ingredients. And what are those? It's gonna be an agricultural byproduct or agricultural product. So we develop quite many feed formulas surrounding agricultural byproducts that are available in Vietnam and also available in the area where we have our central farming areas located. So we feed them with like soy spang and like array, like leftover soy from the food industry, with the peanut spang. We also feed them with like rice bran. And also we also upcycle some certain agricultural byproduct like cassava leftover. Yeah, so those are the main feed that we give to our cricket. But then the beauty thing is have to be the different formula at a different stage of their growth. So for example, it's like when they just hatch until like 7 days, so they are quite fragile and they cannot really digest the food as well as when they are further down in their life cycle. It's just like how we, a baby that we drink milk. So we have to give them a different food, more formulas, feed formulas, and then when they get into the second phase where they start to really like being very active, then we give them a like high energy feed. And then when they get to the closer to the end of their life cycle, which is until like 45 days, then we give them something that make them strong in the taste and the flavor enhancement.
So it's basically not unlike people, you know, you feed babies baby food, you know, then you feed toddlers you know, kind of different food again, you know, little bits and pieces. And then when your crickets, you become teenagers and adults, they just eat, you know, whatever they're supposed to eat.
Yeah. So we have always a saying is like, if we farm crickets for fun, then just farm the way we've been farming everything. But if we want to build it to be in a sector, to make it efficient, to make it productive, and to solve really a problem that we are addressing, then there's quite a certain level of technologies, practices that need to be developed and improved. So that is our motto since we started the business. And then the most important thing is like we trying to give the market options. So We are not hardcore people pointing at someone else's face like, you have to stop eating meat, you have to eat cricket. We don't plan, and we don't believe that is the way. Like harmonizing what we have, the food resources we have, seem to be and proven to be more like a solution to tackle those crises rather than to be hardcore black and white. So we give the consumers, we give our client options. So they can also producing food with animal protein, but then they can also slowly switching into something more sustainable by launching a product of hybrid, like still like reducing the amounts of animal protein they use, replaced with cricket protein. And then the next step is going to be launching a completely new product with only cricket protein. So then their consumers, their customer have more options to choose. So we have 7 days a week. We can have 2 days eating meat, 2 days eating seafood, 2 days eating something with insects, and then 1 day being vegan. Or you can play around with the 7 days a week that we have. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what you described sounds like a very compact operation, especially compared to cattle farming. So I did some research and the numbers vary, but it seems that it takes about 2,000 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of beef. It also takes 10 pounds of grain to produce 1 pound of meat. And in the United States alone, over 5 million acres of land are used to grow feed for animals, and only 4 million acres are used to grow plants for humans to eat. So I'm curious, how do these numbers compare to cricket's environmental footprint? Sounds like it should be really low.
So, for example, it's like there's a research and public research, privately research to measure and to monitor the input resource to produce cricket. So the record so far is that to produce the same amount of beef, but cricket only required like 10 times less feed, 100 times less time, 200 times less land, and 2,000 times less water. And especially is that when it comes to greenhouse gas, like CO2, methane, they like emit like 100 times less than what like cow can produce. That's just the public numbers, and that number is really benchmarked with the other cricket farms. But for cricket one, we hit quite a good record with food conversion rate, like feed conversion rate. It means like how many input kilo of feed you're gonna have per kilo of cricket. So far we are having a very stable number at 1.7. It means we only need 1.7 kilo of feed, and we can have 1 kilo of cricket. We could do that, and this require a lot of elements involving to whole farming, feeding, and also like optimizing the farming conditions. But being sustainable is not enough as a good story to sell cricket. But if you look into the whole nutritional profile, cricket only is known widely about protein, but actually it's much more than that. For example, it's like if we are looking for zinc to increase or enhance our immunity, then like 1 gram of cricket, it contains 3 times more than zinc compared to oyster. And then we all know what is the benefit for oyster. Apart from zinc is being good for immunity, but it's also very good for man health, right? We also have like different type of bros, like mineral and vitamin A, vitamin E, and then we have the whole range of vitamin B. It can be biotin, like niacin. It can be also like folic acid, B12, and then I mean. And then there's in terms of like mineral, it have fiber, it have like iron, potassium, magnesium. So you literally eat one ingredient, and then you can have your body consumed with the rest of the other nutritions that we have to be. We have to have it from the other supplements, or we have to complement our diet with something else to have the entire finished nutritional profile. And in terms of fiber, I mean, it's like cricket is one of the very rare animal protein with fiber.
Oh, that is indeed very rare. It sounds like crickets are almost like this vitamin pill. Like if you, even if you for some reason didn't like the taste or just, still squirmish about eating insects, just taking them as vitamins would do just fine. It would be
Oh, actually,
beneficial.
you just give some players in the market a very good idea. Why don't we just capsulize
Capsulize it. Exactly.
it?
So some of these crickets have to mate so you can have the next population of them, right? So how does it work?
So we used to have a joke about some dairy farm that they train the farm how to go to the milking pallet, right? So we also make the same joke, is like we can train our cricket to find their own best and to lay egg exactly where we want.
Oh,
So
wow.
we also train our cricket to lay egg exactly when and where and how. So actually, it's a joke that we make. So when I think the methodology is quite simple. It's like when cricket they need to lay egg, and then this is their natural instinct that need to find somewhere very moist, and soft to lay eggs. So what we do is that we just provide them the condition for that. We provide them the place for that, because like for the rest of their life cycle, everything is so dry and clean, and and like low humidity in the environment. And then when the signal comes that we know they need to lay eggs, or according to their life cycle, we know, okay, they're about to lay eggs, then we provide them a egg tray where we moisturize it, where we provide the soft elements so they feel comfortable, and then they come and they lay eggs. And then for the commercial production, we let them lay egg one time, and then we remove the egg tray. And then, but then for the parenting farm, then we let them lay eggs for another like 2-3 times. And then we have enough of eggs for the next season, that next batch. But cricket, they have a very short life cycle. Huh? It's only 45 days. After 45 days, they die old anyway. And then normally is that we're harvesting at the very, very end of their life cycle. So they had a very beautiful, happy, well-connected in their colony's life. And then, and then we provide them everything. We provide them good food. We provide them healthy, clean environment to live in. And we also provide them a very friendly network of other cricket to mate. And I think it's ready to say goodbye. And then they say goodbye to this life. And then they leave a very strong impact to the human.
I see. So does it mean that the cricket crop generally takes about 45 days to harvest?
So, yeah, so we harvest them around like 42, 43 days, which is the very end of their life cycle. Just one day or two more days, they are old. So this is what we normally do. And then after harvesting, we also follow a very strict animal welfare protocol.
So how many do you harvest a month? Or, you know, do you measure this in amount of crickets or kilos or metric tons?
Okay. Let's put it like this. Every month right now, we are processing around 45 metric tons of fresh cricket. And just give you a bit of headache, because I know you are super smart. You love math and back in school, but each of them weighs about 0.03 gram. 0.03, like 35 grams. But cricket, then it's millions or trillions of cricket per month.
Wow.
Yeah.
So but millions and trillions. Wow.
Yeah. There's a lot of discussion. It's like, why we have to have so many crickets just to save the planet? I mean, it's like, it's a very interesting question. You didn't address it, but... I like to raise it.
Sure.
So we do have a lot of discussion. A lot of people say, oh, why have these thousands of cricket? And then here just one life of the cow. So it's not a chicken and egg story. It's not an apple to apple comparison. So for example, it's like cricket, they don't have a central nerve. So they don't really feel the pain. It's a scientific thing to that they need to know. And so whatever they react during the processing, it's just their muscle reaction. It's just like bland. You know, the mimosa plant, they also react when you touch them or when you step on them. So it doesn't mean that they feel pain, or it's just a normal muscle reactions. So cricket doesn't have central nerve, so they don't really feel the pain. And we still follow exactly the protocol. But then we harvest them at the end of their life cycle. So they say goodbye to this life anyway. So why don't we just turn them into a superhero cricket, like a super cricket that they save the planet. So they have a meaningful life and have a meaningful purpose. And so this is our argument for any question when it comes to why it's one life of a cow instead of like millions or thousands of lives of cricket, because they are not animal. I mean, it's that they are under animal sectors, but they are called insect for a reason.
So did your family and friends believe in that idea?
At the beginning, no. I think it's like, I think my husband, in my entire family, my husband was the only one believing the idea and silently support me. In the family of Nam, I think it was even harder because no one really believed in it and really challenged it. So I think Nam was very persistent and was under a lot of pressure to prove it worked to his family first. Because I mean, it's like, who gonna think of farming cricket as industrial scale? We even now, like, we have a lot of like client audit, like on-site audit. They visit the factory, they visit the farms, but then, they always like have their eyes completely wide open, their jaw drop. It's like, really, there's such a model? But yes, but now there's now it's proven that it works. It's proven that there's a market. It's proven that we can farm it at a large scale. And after July this year, 2023, we're opening our second factory. And the capacity is going to be increased to 150 tons a month for the phase one. And then phase three is going to be 300 tons a month. And then the final phase is going to be around like 1,000 tons of fats cricket per month will be processed.
See, I think yeah. You told me that in the beginning of this journey, some people called you the cricket queen.
Yeah, because like for the past more than 6 years, everything coming out of my mouth is cricket and cricket. And then people know me more about my business of cricket. So they tend to make it fun about cricket queen. And then maybe they call them a cricket king. Because I think we can go nonstop talking about cricket, and then whatever question we got thrown at about cricket, I think we would be very confident and correctly answer and address them.
Who are your customers and who buys your product? I think you told me that you actually had more interest from the developed countries like US, Europe, and Japan.
So, yeah. I think our model is different. The first day when we start a business, we aim to export because this sector back then required a lot of education, required a lot of like media, public announcement or attention from government, public institutes, and also newspaper. And there's already a market out there in Western world, in developed country, looking for sustainable protein, because when it comes to sustainability, that has to come with a price. That's why a plastic straw is cheaper than a grass straw or a compostable straw, right? So it's really a different developing indicator for us to choose where should be our focus. And so we started the journey with a very different path. Like we went for the most difficult market globally, and from then we expand to the other less difficult market. So we invested for a lot to win the European market, North American market, and then we have in Asia, we have Japan, we have Australia, Singapore, South Korea, and then we have a new market, which is like South Africa, Africa. Yeah, and also now we're also looking into expanding to a market into China with some local partner. Yeah, so for us, Europe is still taking account of 50% of our total revenue. Come after is North America, and then Japan, South Korea, Singapore, South Africa, and now we have a local market. So after 6 years of fighting in the overseas market, now we are returning back to the Vietnamese market. Because it's the mindset here. I mean, if it work in developed country, why is not working in the developing country? But the approach for the Vietnamese market is different. So we've been exporting ingredients. So our client are food and beverage manufacturers and also premium pet food company like the humanization train who want to get their dog and cat, like the pet owner try to feed the like their pet children more sustainable product, more of the healthy product, like gut enhancement or more like immunity enhancement ingredient, like proven, scientifically proven. Then those are our clients, and then we sell them a finished ingredient or just ingredient. But then for the Vietnamese market, we have a different approach. So Vietnam is a developing country, and one of the indicator to reflect the growth of the country is how easy people can afford and can access to meat. And I think our in Vietnam, that indicator just been more brighter for the past 5-7 years. So it's not a very right time for us to convince people to eat less meat. But that's why we target into the snack business where we launch a retail, like the FMCG product, snack to target the Vietnamese market. So instead of having a junk snack associated with bad for health, then we launched something new, something very novel, something sustainable or something healthy. So they don't have to give up their craving, but then they still can have a healthy health benefit product.
So when you say when you export finished product into the developed countries, the finished product is what? Is it cricket flour or?
Yeah, so we export to the other like developed country, like it's Europe or North America. We export mainly cricket protein powder, different type, whole dry cricket, and also the Texturized cricket protein, which is the very new product that we launched. Like we give cricket protein a texture just like meat, same mouthfeel. It's not too far from what people eating meat, but then it's neutral, tastes like cricket. In it's leaner and more sustainable, and it's even cheaper than meat. But then for the Asian, like for the local market, we introduce the whole dry season cricket because we already have experience, like we have experience with eating cricket here. And then the next step is that we're going to make sort of like Cheetos or Nippet type of snack, but instead of like only corn flour, but then we're going to substitute or fortify the formula with cricket. So they still can have Cheetos type of snack, but with nutrition. Because like I think it's like men, we need 14 grams of protein. Woman, we need 12 grams of protein. And then with our Asian, in particular, diet, it's not that easy to have like 70 or 80 grams of meat per meal. Like we cannot have like 70 or 80 grams of meat for lunch. So whatever we eat during the day should be subsidized or substitute that quarter for us into protein. So introduce this kind of like high protein, healthy product could directly affect their health and also their lifestyle.
I think you told me that you have your own cricket recipe, some of which include iceberg lettuce salad with roasted crickets, rice noodles with cricket meat, and baguette slices with cricket pate. And I think you serve these dishes in various, you know, demo parties to many people. So are you still developing in new recipes?
So on a personal perspective, so we sponsor a lot of events, like high level, like governmental event, diplomatic event, school, university event, like festival. And then we sponsor them with a cricket snack, also the cricket deep fried bowl. Or we also serve them with the baguette where they can have the barbecue meat in between. So we make everything with our new product. It's called Texturized Cricket Protein. It's a hybrid product of cricket protein and plant-based protein. And then the finished product is going to be more complete than plant-based protein in terms of nutrition. It makes the ingredient list more lean and shorter instead of like 17, 15 ingredients. But it's now it's only 4 or 5 ingredients as a finished product. And it's a lean product, no fat. So, and it doesn't give up the mouthfeel when you eat the plant-based protein, nor soy aftertaste, because cricket enhances the flavor. So we serve them in those skewer, like teriyaki stir-fry on noodle and rice, burger, vegetable, like meatball and everything. And also just like those fancy cracker tacos with the whole cricket or with the barbecue meat. So this is what we are serving. But then on my personal level, it's like I still make smoothie for my husband, cricket protein. And then last Christmas, I make a very big batch of gingerbread cookie with 15% of cricket powder, and then give it to the school, and then also give to my children's school, give to other friends and everything. Also like, attended at the bazaar. So that's just my personal experience and journey with cricket cooking.
This is so interesting. So I know that some time ago you experimented with some AI technology, did sort of like a pilot to see if this AI can help you in any way to grow crickets better. Tell me a little bit about what you did.
Okay, so we collab with another tech startup. where they develop a fundamental AI technologies in terms of like recognitions of behavior. And then what we do is like we collab where we provide them a real-time data, and then they let the machine, they at the phase of like machine learning. So let's put it like this. Everything on this planet, under our perspective, improvisation is one thing and optimization is a second thing to solve the problem of shortage here and shortage there. And also to solve problem with like food security and make everything more sustainable and balanced. So we try to optimize everything in there, is that reducing the mortalities and trying to understand what they need, and we give them what they need so they grow better. So with that AI technologies, we hope and we are working to work with the team to understand the behaviors of cricket. For example, the way they move when they are thirsty or hungry or when they are under stress. So for example, it's like it took chicken and pig and cow farming 50 years to have a farming protocol to understand how many square meter a cow need or how many chicken you can have in a square in one square meter. So cricket farming, when it's going mainstream, or if we want it to go mainstream, we also need to have those data. We also need to have those understanding. And the good thing now is that we don't have to manually document it on paper or use an Excel. But now we have a real-time monitor. And then based on the AI, we can have a better understanding. And then we have an earlier intervention and manipulation to make sure cricket, they have the best optimal condition to live. Mm-hmm. So it's not only about the mortalities, but also about the best farming practice that we can develop with that. Gotcha. I think it's like, it's the best way to understand the cricket rather than trying to assume what are the cricket need, right?
I see. And I think that involves sort of like putting cameras and microphones and cricket bins that just kind of like sit there and listen and watch what crickets were doing and gather that information.
I think so far at Cricket One, very good questions. I think we have almost like 1,000 hours of real-time monitoring the cricket. Mm-hmm. And it's like real-time. So I think it's improved a lot the space and the base of the machine learning. Mm-hmm. So we have a camera looking straight, and we could also count how many crickets that we're having when they're coming up to eat or to drink. So there will be a further like analyzation, further development on that AI thing.
Yeah, and do I understand right that the way the cricket chirp, you know, those sounds can change? You know, so stressed crickets chirp differently than happy crickets, and it actually, like our ears can't detect that, but AI might be able to.
I would say, I don't know a lot of people in cricket farming, but I know one person. I think he's a cricket ghost because he could understand cricket chirping very well, which is my co-founder, Nam. I think he's like a heart and the soul of our Cricket One. I mean, it's like he could listen to cricket and then understand what's happening. But the thing is, like, we have only one Nam, right? And then it's very much about dedications and also how good his ear and then how devoting his life to the cricket farming. But we have only one Nam, so we need to multiply that. So we need to have his, we need to have the AI act like Nam. So yes, cricket, they chirp differently when they are at different states. If they stress, they chirp different. If they are mating, they chirp different. If they are resting, they chirp different. If you enter the farm during the mating session or mating area, like period, you're gonna hear very like relaxing, not too loud, but recognizable chirping sounds. Yeah, and then I think it's very important to also have the AI adapting to that. But that will be quite a long time to go until we get to that phase. So right now we're still focusing more into a real time rather than sound analyzation.
I think Nam also told me that When there isn't enough male crickets, females actually fight for them. It's almost always females who fight. So I know you just returned from a trade show in the US. What were you exhibiting? And were you feeding people cricket dishes? And how did it go?
So actually, the show that we just went recently was a pet food show. It's called a World Pet Food Forum. It's more like a playground for all of the trading company, broker, buyers, co-packing house, co-manufacturing partners go there looking for a new processing technologies, novel ingredients, and then looking for something novelty in the sectors, and then to set the trend for the year upcomings when it comes to pet food sectors. So we went to there and then we introduced our new ingredients for texturized cricket protein that can go in the canned food or in the toppers. We also introduced a new pricing, also the specification for like of the cricket protein for pet food. So it's I brought the whole dry cricket, the whole like the season whole dry cricket, and then give away to people for fun and also to have a nice pickup line when they stop by our booth. But at the end, they still gone back into the cricket protein powder, the concentrated protein, the performance of the cricket in pet food. I would say people are completely aware of cricket protein in pet food. There's a lot of scientific paper proof the benefit of having cricket included in the pet food and directly affect in a very positive way and improve the immunity, the hair and skin conditions, the heart conditions of the pet. But one of the biggest taboo people get, like the industrial people get, is like they think cricket protein is expensive. But actually, it's expensive because there was no cricket one before earlier in that sector. But now we are here, so we change completely that taboo, and people pay less for way higher performing ingredients, better quality. But then it's also a way for me to explain to people, to our potential client, is like you don't need to add exactly amounts of cricket powder to replace exactly amounts of animal protein because they're just way more condensed in terms of nutrition than traditional conventional animal protein. So they actually add less, but then they get more. So when it's go down to the price, it doesn't change much of their cost structures. And then there's a lot of like health benefit come with cricket protein. So they either use it as a functionality ingredient, or they're going to use it as a protein enhancement, or completely a like protein source of the final product. So there's a lot of way to go around and play around with the sectors to launch a flashy, tasty, and attractive product to the pet owner. So actually, the show was very, very interesting and very, very helpful for us to spread out the message, to relay the message from those public research to the people who involved and very much active in the pet food sector.
Gotcha. So, any last words on crickets and eating them to our listeners?
Yeah, I would say it's like if you're looking for how would I say, if they are looking for a solution to make their life more balanced in terms of health benefit, in terms of environmental benefits, and to be cool and to be ahead of time, then they should consider to include insect-based or cricket protein into their diet. And they are actually very tasty.
And they're very tasty. That's a good way to end it. Here's the new delicacy, crickets.
Thanks for checking out the Making Sense of Science podcast. If you like the show and you want to hear more from the best thinkers of our time to help make sense of the latest health innovations and their impacts, please hit the follow button. And in the meantime, visit our online magazine at leaps.org, where you can read in-depth articles that explore health breakthroughs through the lens of rational optimism. Thanks for reading, listening, and most importantly, thinking about what you find on leaps.org.